Wolf, get away from those sheep.
Bollocks.
You're listening to the Wolf and the Shepherd podcast, broadcasting from Fort Worth in the great state of Texas. Now, get ready for this episode of the Wolf and the Shepherd.
Welcome to this episode of the Wolf and the Shepherd. Today we have with us Robert Yoho. Robert, so glad you could join us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, Robert, during some of our emails, you said that you're most alert kind of 10 o'clock or after during the day. And my first reaction was to try and book you for like about 8 o'clock in the morning.
No, that's a little early, but it would have worked. I, you know, like a lot of people, I'm a morning person.
Well, I'm just glad you pointed it out, because we consistently forget time zones.
That's
and we've
true.
Been running a campaign to abolish time zones, not because there'll be any benefit to the farmers agriculturally or anything to do with industry. It's just it will be less confusing to
yeah.
us. So.
I mean, how many times have we almost either missed appointments or we turn around and we're like right. 2 hours early and we're sitting here waiting for the guest yeah. and they're on California time. We're like, what's
except that
on?
Time we did it on the wrong day. And then the following weekend when it was supposed to be, we completely forgot about it.
That so, is true. Yeah, yeah is we true. Did show up one Sunday night ready to go, and we yeah. looked at the calendar wrong. So,
so is that.
I'm happy it's not just me.
Yeah. yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Well, not only that, but I guess it's probably better there's folks like you in the medical field to take care of us, and him and I are not responsible for anything medical, because I'm pretty sure we kill every single patient that
right.
we have.
Now, that does lead me on to an interesting question, which I'm sure you know the answer to, Robert. So after cancer and heart-related diseases, what's the third largest killer in the United States?
Well, Peter Gerche says it's pharmaceuticals mm-hmm. and poorly prescribed or poorly conceived drugs. So, I mean, it's a horrible statistic. If he's right, he's certainly right that it's a huge problem. He estimates 250,000 deaths in the U.S. and Europe alone every year due to pharmaceuticals.
Oh, man. Yeah. So before we get too deep into the medical stuff, Robert, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
All right. I had an interesting career. I worked as initially a board certified emergency physician, and then I got into cosmetic surgery, and I trained over a period of 2 decades to do what I did, which was breast implants and liposuction, facelifts, and so on. And my clientele was primarily women. So I learned about prescribing bioidentical hormones, because as I grew older, my clientele grew older, and pretty soon all of them were over 50 and they were suffering with menopause. So that's one of my fields of expertise. And I quit around 2 years ago and started writing full time. And I've written 2 books, one about healthcare corruption called Butchered by Healthcare, and the other about bioidentical hormones, which is Hormone Secrets. And so those are on Amazon. That's what I'm promoting here, if I'm promoting anything.
Got you. So bioidentical hormones. Can you walk us through what a bioidentical hormone is?
So the medical industry promotes patents, because the patents are an excuse for them to charge almost any price. And the drugs that they promote primarily are patented drugs. Now, I mean, their prices are so outrageous that 95% of the drugs that we consume in America are actually generics. Bioidentical hormones are identical to some human body compound, and in theory, they can't be patented, with a few exceptions. So these things are not as profitable, and the industry has run their utility down, when actually they're the most efficacious medications in our armamentarium of all. They're really good, and they really help prevent diseases, and also in some cases treat diseases. And so I'm trying to promote something against the tide of industry propaganda, and we've seen a lot of propaganda lately, so you guys are aware that this happens.
Yeah. So as an example, and I don't think this is a bioidentical hormone by any means, but kind of going along what you're saying, things like that are plant-based. I mean, you can't patent a plant, right? Because the plant comes out of the ground. But what about something like a penicillin that's I'm guessing naturally occurring. You can't really put a patent on that one either, can you?
Penicillin is could have been patented, but the developers of penicillin very idealistically sold the patent for a dollar to whatever it was, the government or something, so it could be widely used without a patent. The bioidentical hormones, by definition, they're part of the human body, and so those in general can't be patented. There are a few exceptions, but they're incredibly effective. I mean, I saw miraculous results by just sticking a testosterone pellet in my cosmetic surgery patients with their permission, of course, and their foreknowledge, and they change from being just in miserable shape to in a couple of weeks into people that they looked like many years before. They felt great and had plenty of energy, sexuality improved, and so on. So, I mean, the results are incredible. They're not well known. It's unbelievable to me that this is not well known, but the doctors these days are just entirely influenced or bought off, or however you want to say it, by the propaganda put forth by all the huge companies. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think life was easier before the internet in terms of being comfortably ignorant to a lot of stuff going on in the medical field, because it used to be if you wanted to know about, you know, a certain condition, you'd get a book, you'd read about it, take that, okay, they've probably done their research, and that would be the basis of your facts or opinion on something. There never seemed to be any type of counter opinion. It didn't really cross your mind that, hey, I wonder if, you know, if I go to the doctor, he's going to prescribe me something I don't really need because he gets a kickback from somebody. Those thoughts never used to cross my mind. I don't think until the internet came along and you started reading, you know, some alternative opinions to the mainstream voice, that really anybody started looking into medical corruption on a wide scale. And certainly I can't remember ever seeing probably any TV show or investigative reporting on, you know, corruption in the medical industry when I grew up in England. It wasn't until I moved to the States, you know, possibly around 2000, I started, you know, hearing more about it.
Well, Wolf, the biggest gut punch I ever had in the last 4 years when I worked on this work was realizing how bought and sold 90% of the internet is with corporate messages. And even Wikipedia is barraged, I mean, probably hourly, by ghostwriters from Big Pharma trying to change the narrative so people will believe what they... Wikipedia is probably one of the best remaining sources, but they are beat on all the time trying to change the messages into commercial messages from these enormous companies, these big pharma companies, for example.
So before we kind of delve into that, do you have any kind of connections with one of these big pharma companies that can cut him and I a giant check and just be our sponsor?
Because we don't want to badmouth them yet.
Yeah. You know, we might have to like redact this episode like Tylenol comes through and sponsors us for like $10 million.
Right. Yeah. That's why we didn't come right out the gate saying Pfizer can suck my ass, you know.
Right. Yeah. You know, just in case.
Yeah,
never know when Motrin's going to come along and say, hey, we're the official sponsor of the Wolf and the Shepherd.
Yeah, we'd be like, hey, two Tyler not working for you? Have you tried 12?
Yeah.
You know. There
you go. I don't, and I'm as far away from any of that as you can imagine. You got to realize that these companies have more criminal settlements than any industry in history. Now, this is, you know, it's very easy. You go on Wikipedia, they can't take that off of there, and just Google or just search for pharmaceutical company settlements, and you'll see the incredible page of shame with the top 20 companies or whatever it is. And the settlements are in the billions every year. And there are observers that think that the federal prosecutors should have taken at least one of these companies completely apart, jailed the executives, and and forced them into bankruptcy. But they don't do that. They just take a $3 billion fine from these behemoths, you know, and their grosses are in the tens of billions, maybe sometimes 50 billion, which is, so it's pocket change. And they get the fine, they stand on the pile of money, they declare victory, and the same game goes on, and the same criminal activities occur over and over.
Yeah, isn't that kind of that same theory where I had a discussion about speed limits? And, you know, if you're a multimillionaire, all of speeding is a fine, right? So you get a ticket for $250 and you basically say, oh, that's chump change. So it's not really illegal if you can pay it off. But somebody working minimum wage, a $250 ticket hurts them a heck of a lot more than that millionaire.
They probably can't afford a car, which will break the speed limit if they're on minimum wage, though.
Yeah, but they have some of those low speed limits in that's other true. States. Yeah. Not 85 school like
zones.
It is here.
School zones are a bit fussy.
Yeah, school well. Zone. Yeah.
Now, so go ahead.
Sorry. For our listeners, could you explain what your definition of science is? Because again, we all thought we knew what science was a few years ago, but now we've been told that what we thought was science is no longer science. That science now, instead of something being constant and as old as the universe, is something which changes because of somebody's opinion. So could you tell us what science is and what it certainly is not?
Okay, so this we have to get into this. We're talking about medical science because that's what I know about. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the FDA was originally conceived in a very idealistic way to prevent horrible problems. There was this drug called chloramphenicol, which was a disaster, and there were some near disasters with these drugs that cause birth defects. And the FDA was conceived to take care of this by requiring formal study of drugs before they entered the marketplace. And this evolved into what we called randomized controlled placebo controlled studies, which are considered to be the gold standard by academics in medicine. This means that you, no one knows which is the drug and which is the sugar pill, and there are various statistical methods to analyze it. Well, the problem with this is that we put them in the hands of the foxes guarding the chicken coop, and the companies were then responsible for actually doing their own studies. And they progressively adulterated and ruined the studies that they used to, that they're required to use to evaluate these drugs. And so what happened is that they started using contract research groups in other countries. And these people, if they don't do exactly what they're told, they never get hired again in India or wherever they are. And they ruined the statistics through manipulation. And they also threw out the studies that didn't show what they wanted to show. For example, the HPV vaccine is entering the news now because it's been discovered belatedly that they threw away half the studies, right? Japan knew about this when they evaluated the drug. This is a drug that both you guys have probably had. It's the cervical wart prevention, and in theory, it prevents cervical cancer. And it's an injection you get when you're a little kid. So Japan evaluated these studies and they threw the whole thing out. And now only 1% of Japanese are inoculated against the theoretical HPV plague. Anyway, I lost my thread there. So these things are now, they've been essentially ruined by the industry. They're allowed to ruin them because they own the studies. They're allowed to hide them because they own the studies. And it's made the whole medical science completely unreliable. And now we have to rely on clinical experience, which is much better than you think. And for hormones, we have clinical experience of over 100 years for thyroid and nearly 100 years for most of the rest of the hormones. And we have studies. They're not randomized control studies as much, but we have these huge number of studies that show they absolutely work. And then we have this other thing called clinical experience, which means that individual doctors have had experience with these drugs like I have, and they've seen that they work better than anything else they've ever seen. I mean, it's crazy. So we have to rely on stuff that's considered, quote, anecdotal by the scientists, but we can't trust the scientists anymore, not at all, because they're all on the pay of big pharma and other industry sources. I mean, that's where how the money comes around. And I can tell you the rest of how the other parts interlock with the FDA and all that, if you want me to get into that. That's important.
Absolutely. But basically, kind of in a nutshell, then what you're telling us is because of the hormones being natural, you can't patent them, all that good stuff. There's no money in them. Yeah.
Exactly.
So there's no way for you to really get out there and say, you know, let's buy up some TV time for some TV commercials during the Super Bowl, or, you know, sponsor a NASCAR vehicle or something like that, where somebody like me, I've heard of all these other drugs because you're bombarded in the media with them. You're, you know, looking on the internet and you see a little ad for it. You get the brand recognition, all that, and it just gets ingrained in your head, right? But there's no money in what you're talking about, so there's no way to really get the message out.
Shepard, that interlocks with influence theory. And you guys have heard of Robert Cialdini. He wrote the book Influence. It's a critical message for your listeners, and you should pick it up because it's a part of everyone's life right now. And what it says is that any exchange of value poisons the well. In other words, if you are given money for anything, you can't maintain objectivity. In fact, you become a creature or bought part of the marketing machine of the corporation that gave you money. And it's much more powerful than you think. Even a meal spoils relationships. And certainly fee for service medicine is an incentive to do too much, and surgical payments, which are larger, there are tremendous incentives to over-operate and over, you know, and I'm not saying doctors are all bad. Let's open this with that. We're idealistic about our beliefs, and we're the best trained group in America, large group, and so on and so forth. I should also just bring up my standard disclaimer, which I didn't put at the beginning of the podcast, and that this, you know, due to the lawyers in our audience and everywhere, this can't be construed as medical advice. You should use anything you hear here at your own risk. And if you have a problem, go see a licensed provider.
Yes.
So sorry about that.
Oh, no problem. Okay. And don't sue us, because we have collectively $16.
Yeah.
And we're hungry.
We've hidden all our money in cryptocurrency, because at the moment there's no government who can actually force you to give it to them. But no, you don't need to worry.
You lost it, right, Wolf? You lost it.
Yeah.
You lost the private keys.
It fell out.
I'm sorry.
Along with my guns. Given that I think we once gave advice for hemorrhoids to use barbed wire, I don't really think you're in any danger of people taking it too seriously. But one thing I did want to touch on, with doctors and medicine, they used to be very, very revered. Like if a doctor said something, that was almost biblical in a way. You know, it's gospel. But I think now the medical profession has turned back to like the Middle Ages of the church, in terms of you can't question the official narrative. It used to be the church back in the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages. If you had any type of theories alternate to the church, or you questioned anything, they kind of put you to death. And nowadays it's kind of a symbolic put to death, in terms of they close you down, they wipe you off the internet, you don't exist if you make too many waves questioning the official narrative. And so people are scared to speak up and voice their concerns, because they're told anything, you know, affront to this official narrative makes them a conspiracy theorist. It makes them a domestic terrorist. It makes them, you know, somebody who doesn't trust science. And people are afraid to even speak to family members who have a little bit of an opposite opinion now, because they're, you know, being labeled, you know, anti-vaxxers. When, okay, so I don't want one particular vaccine, and that makes me a total anti-vaxxer just because of this one thing here. I've had all the rest when I was a kid, you know, against polio, everything else, but I'm an anti-vaxxer just because I don't want this one particular shot. So do you see that the solution to this is more education, so that everybody's on the same page and see that the medical industry is not an infallible being, or that there is going to be a light at the end of the tunnel where eventually this whole thing is going to be, you know, overhauled and completely dismantled? Because to me, I can't even trust, you know, like, I don't know, like any doctor, that there's not a political bias, or they're not prescribing something that they've been told to, or they're being paid to prescribe.
Paid, right. Max, that's a super incisive comment. And I believe that we have burned through the trust that we build up for millennia. The patient-doctor relationship is not a jeopardy. It's now been burned. And I'm ashamed of my colleagues, the ones that haven't spoken up about what's going on. And I you know, you got to realize the position I'm in. I'm retired. So as far as I can tell, they can't get me unless they come over and shoot me, right? I don't have any financial assets that they can damage. They can't take away my salary or my medical license. It doesn't matter. Yeah, I'm ashamed of these guys. And anybody that trusts their doctor without verifying now is not keeping up with current events.
Yeah, I guess that's one of the scariest parts. I think we've actually brought that up before because, you know, what's the old thing? And you being a doctor, I'm sure you probably heard this several times before. You know, you explain something in medical terms, and what does a layman say? Can you tell me that in English, doc? You know, because we don't get it. So we have to trust what the doctor says. You know, yes, you need to take this pill 3 times a day, blah, blah, blah. And you don't know, you just knock it back and say, well, yeah, you know, this makes me feel better. I guess the doctor knows what he's doing.
It's gotten so bad that if you have a complicated problem, you need to almost get physician level expertise, which you can do if you really work hard on it. You're a bright person. You can figure it out. You almost need physician level expertise to navigate the healthcare system. Otherwise, you're going to be shunted off in a corner and given God knows what, you know. And this is really true for cancer or complicated end of life problems. You have to learn it. And if you can, you should get someone by your side who is sharp and is willing to be your advocate, because that's what it takes. You guys are young. You probably don't have any kind of problems, and you're better off just staying the freaking heck away from it. You know?
Yeah. I've not actually been to the doctor other than a routine checkup or a test or whatever since I was about 19. Cause I'm a firm believer in, you know, kind of like natural immunity. And as long as you have the correct nutrition and, you know, try and remain somewhat healthy, other than those anomalies which come along, which statistically, you know, they may or may not, then you can live a pretty healthy lifestyle without, you know, going and having, you know, antibiotics every time you get a sore throat. And that's one thing which amazed me when I came to the United States. In England, what they call strep throat here in the United States, they just call a sore throat in England. They don't give you anything for it unless there's an infection which goes on or it has other knock-on effects. If you get a sore throat in England, you don't go to the doctor. You get some ice cream. You have some ice cream. You rest for a couple of days and it goes away. Here, I was amazed to find out, oh, the kid can't come to soccer practice today because he's got strep throat, or he's not going to school because he's got strep throat. Whereas like in England, you're like, so you've got sore throat. So what? I mean, I sat there. I remember sitting in class or, you know, going out playing soccer with a sore throat and you just got over it and that was it. And then I was amazed to find out it's actually a thing which people take seriously here, because like one in every 14 million people might develop something serious if, you know, that infection, that strep virus spreads. So they do blow certain things out of proportion in an attempt to try and force you on this continual conveyor belt of taking drugs into yourself. I mean, I can't remember the official statistic now for how many injections a kid is supposed to have by 18 months. My son's now 8. And it felt like that first year, every other week, we were just taking him in for somebody to, you know, inject him for something which there hadn't been a case in like 140 years and, you know, mainland United States. And it was just,
I think my biggest shocker, honestly, was the chicken pox vaccine. Because I remember being a kid, you just got the chicken pox.
You went to a chicken pox party.
Yeah, your parents found out who got the chicken pox. Like, oh, we're all going over to Johnny's house today. Yeah. I'm like, well, he's not even my friend. Yeah. I don't like him. Well, you're going over there and you're going
to
play with him.
For a while, I thought I was really popular, but my parents were just trying to get me to catch the chicken pox. So,
Well, I can't address the statistical the statistics surrounding those individual vaccines, and the sore throat is a case that I know something about. The strep thing does cause myocarditis and other problems that are serious in a very, very small number. And the antibiotics prescribed for sore throats are thought to be for symptoms here. But the theory behind it is that we are preventing this very, very small number of serious problems. But let me kind of give you guys a rule of thumb about statistics, right? If the studies are large and the statistics are small, it's BS. Okay. In other words, it's stuff that wouldn't be repeated in another study in all likelihood, and it has very little meaning. So much of medicine has devolved into huge studies that the statisticians manage, and they assure everyone that they have some meaning. And the even if the figures are not adulterated or ruined in some way, it has very little meaning. So that's one of my rules of thumb. And the second rule of thumb is if somebody is, if you don't understand the narrative, then somebody is likely selling you something in order to make some money. And so you guys should, anyone with a brain should be able to understand medical reasoning and medical decision making in these studies. And if you don't, it's likely nonsense. And this applies to your attorneys and it applies to your financial advisors. If you don't understand what they're saying, kick the guy out of your office and dig up somebody else, because they're trying to sell you, they're blowing smoke in a place that you don't want to blow smoke.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. Moving on to more kind of the medical corruption, here's one that has always bothered me. You look at a bill, like a bill from the hospital, right? And they charge you $75 for a Tylenol or $800 for a bag of saline or whatever. Is that just some kind of a markup in there because of all the people that have to touch it and this, that, and the other? Or is that just truly a corrupt way to squeeze some more money out of the insurance companies?
Okay, well, that's a broad question, but the insurance companies are really the part of the problem, because they represent about 20% of the, possibly even 25% of the entire healthcare bill of $4 trillion in America. It's not done like this anywhere else. And the insurance industry, they're not very responsible, because if the total goes up, their cut goes up. They're like a house at Vegas, right? And so they're a terrible way to manage healthcare. And, you know, arguably they've been largely responsible for these run-ups, but the patent system has as well. And basically we've had this insane blend of capitalism and socialism in healthcare, which has resulted in all this escalation. And that $75 Tylenol, that's a low-level story. I mean, it's just, you can't imagine how many hundreds of thousands or millions are billed for a couple of days service, even if it doesn't involve hospitalization in many cases. And the biggest medical centers, the best known medical centers, are sometimes the craziest with the bills. I mean, it just goes on and on. So you guys asked earlier if there's a solution, and I do have solutions in my book, Butchered by Healthcare, right? But it's not an easy problem. And my ultimate conclusion was that we are going to face degeneration in the whole system and some big disaster before anything really happens to change it. And, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, that's in the works.
Before you ask that question, on your book, you held it up there and you had like a little tagline on there. Can you read that out for those that are just listening and not watching Sure. the video?
What to do about doctors, big pharma, and corrupt government ruining your health and medical care.
Okay. Now, I actually have a friend who had a leg amputated, but they amputated the wrong one. So now obviously he didn't have either. But it was amazing how many excuses he made, because he's one of those people, he was a bit older, and he always had this infallible belief in the medical profession. And he went in, he got an infection, he was a farmer, and he got scraped across some equipment. He was cleaning out of a field, he'd bought some new land and doing something. And he ended up that it got such an infection, he was rushed in over a weekend, and they said, all right, first thing Monday morning, and like 3 a.m., 4 a.m. in the morning, they were going to have to amputate just above the knee, I think it was. And they took the wrong leg. And I went in to see him, because I actually played soccer with his son for about 9 years. And he had this excuse. He said, well, you know, they're very busy and mistakes happen. And he says, I don't know really, you know, what they could have done to prevent it. And I had this thought running through my head, which I didn't say. And I was thinking, like, so a little red sticker with this one typed on it and stuck on your leg wouldn't have kind of like given a little bit of an indication. And what it turned out to be, they actually ended up suing, didn't get any money for it. they misread the chart. Whoever wrote down on the chart, the writing was so bad, they just ended up guessing at this word because they had two operations afterwards. They had to get this one out of the way. And so they got rid of the wrong leg. He didn't wake up till, I don't know, 14, 15 hours later. He was still drugged up. So he realized he was missing the leg, but was so drugged up he couldn't tell it was the wrong one. And it wasn't until his wife came in and said, hold on a moment, that's the wrong leg. And then they finally managed to get a nurse and they called the doctors in and they said, yeah, it's the wrong leg. And so then they, another 2 days later, because they had to do a whole bunch of different things then because the infection had spread more, yeah, then they cut off the other leg. But he was an example of somebody who just made any excuses whatsoever for malpractice. And it was actually his wife who tried to sue and get some money. He didn't want to do it. I mean, they failed. But it just amazes me how some people have like, oh no, the doctor said it. And I've got faith in doctors and nurses because I think when they enter the profession, 99.9% of them are pure of heart and they want to do a good thing. But it's just like politics. When you get involved at local politics, you know, at a small level, I think some people go into it with a genuine belief that, yeah, I want to change things for good. You know, I want to correct imbalances and stuff. But, you know, the further you go on in a political career, you're going to be subject to influence, corruption, bribery. Being told that, look, if you don't play the game this way, you're just going to have to get off the carousel because you're not going to have any type of career in this. And I think it's the same thing, you know, doctors see if they get, you know, positioned somewhere that, hey, you know, this is going to be great money. I get to help people. And then all of a sudden, all these kind of insidious hands start coming in and saying, well, look, this is how you actually do things. It doesn't matter if the patient is pretty much going to be okay. We like to have a profit here and these drugs are kind of harmless, so I want you to prescribe these drugs for somebody who's got, you know, a little bit of a sore shoulder, you know, prescribe them these painkillers, you know, even though they don't need them and this will go away in 3 days. And that's something now which, you know, I hate having to question. I hate having to look up and double check and triple check every little ailment and every little thing to make sure that if it was serious enough to go to the doctor, I'm not going to end up with, like, you know, a $4,000 bill for 2 weeks worth of drugs, which I don't need.
Wolf, there's a lot in what you said. So let me just go back to the start and chat about conceptual errors and the kind of errors that people make. You know, I'm a rock climber, or I was a rock climber. I'm too old for that now. But if you tie a knot 1,000 times, one time you're going to mess it up. And I've tied a knot on my harness improperly and then gotten to the top of a 150-foot thing, looked down and realized that if I fell, I would have died, right? And you'd think you couldn't make a mistake like that. Well, we have checks and balances in effect now. Your belayer is supposed to check everything, and I'm supposed to check everything, double check before you get started, right? To avoid things like that. It's the same way when you're driving. When you pull out in traffic and you look to the left and you miss a car that's coming because you're talking to your wife or you're busy or you're thinking about some crazy thing that happened, it doesn't happen very often because your eyes are good, you're young and you can see, you've got good reflexes. And most of the time you swerve away from the problem and it isn't a disaster, but it happens. And to think that you're not capable of a serious mistake, just like that doctor was, is deceiving yourself. Now, today in America, anyway, we have all these checks and balances for the limbs that are supposed to be operated on. That's an error that's been done over and over and over, and it's a disaster. But when I went in to have my foot operated on, they put big red X's on it with a Sharpie marker on, you know, that was the one, or, you know, whatever they did, they had a protocol in place. So I don't think that throwing stones at individual mistakes like that is useful. And the system, whatever system we have, the malpractice system in America, it's a tedious and aggravating process to get compensated for any problem like that. The plaintiff's attorney takes half of the award or a third of the award or whatever it is. And, you get put through hell in order to get it. So that's reality. And I'm not quite as critical as you are, except for maybe the hospital should have had a system in place to prevent that sort of a thing. And I don't think that's the big problem in medicine these days, you know, is what I call conceptual or perceptual errors, you know, that can happen to anyone. You make 1,000 decisions a day. And if you're up on a rock face, every decision you make is potentially a fatal decision for yourself. If you're in medicine, every decision you make is potentially a problem for the patient. Usually not a big problem, because most of the pills that people take, you could take a whole bottle of them and it wouldn't have any effect on you at all. If you didn't take it in combination with another drug, for example, Valium, the benzodiazepams, you can take 100 of those things, generally speaking, and you're going to be sleepy for a couple of days, but you're going to come through it if you're not drinking alcohol at the same time. So the drugs are designed to be able to take a prescription bottle full and avoid a suicide, you know, for the most part. So anyway, I've forgotten what the second part of what you said was. Maybe, well, I can address that.
Yeah, but I think the good doctor is trying to say,
yeah,
the reason that happened is because you were over in England and you weren't in America.
Well, No. I wasn't trying to say that.
I think that's what I'm trying to say.
Well, yeah, I do actually have a reason for that. And I actually 100% agree with you, Robert, that you can pick out individual examples to prove anything. You can prove that doctors are useless. You can prove that doctors are almost like deity. The reason I brought that example up was because later on I was going to lead into, look, I gave you an example of what happens when the government get involved in healthcare and run the system. You know, a government who, like on a Joe Rogan episode I heard recently, Mike Baker, the CIA guy, said, you know, the government can't effectively organize panic in a doomed submarine. And the moment you give, you know, government, you know, I guess carte blanche to run a healthcare system, when you see they can't even repair a road outside, you know, your house properly, you're going to be in for trouble. So that's really why I gave that example, because later on I was going to lead into, look, under government run healthcare, you get a lot more errors. But then you've got private healthcare and the private industry, which is profit driven. So, I mean, you're kind of in between the devil and the deep blue sea in terms of which route you want to go, because there are a lot of people here in the States calling for a government healthcare run system. Now, to you, how would you see that playing out if the government suddenly took charge of the healthcare system?
Well, I don't have a perfect solution for this, but you got to realize that we have three systems in America that are totally effed up, right? That are run by the government: Medicare, the Indian healthcare system, and the Veterans Administration. All three are a complete mess. Anyone who's worked in the last two, they understand just how poorly run they are and how wasteful it is and how they do a terrible job. So other countries, now you got to realize that in America, this is a fantastical statistic. We spend twice per capita what other countries spend on health care. Okay. Twice what Britain, twice what, and it's not in absolute terms, per person, we spend twice what all the other developed countries spend. And we get a product that is worse. I mean, we've got all this stuff. It's about 50% ineffective or even harmful in America. And that's not a controversial figure. There's many papers that say that. So we're doing it poorly. And just how we could do it right, I mean, who knows? Singapore has excellent healthcare. They spend 5% instead of 20% or 10% in Britain and Canada on their healthcare. Okay, so they do a great job, but they have to put up with a freaking dictator, you know? So I mean, I don't have a solution, but we do need to negotiate these with these companies, these pharmaceutical companies and other industrial medical companies at the federal level, because they are too big to negotiate with a healthcare system to negotiate with. I mean, it's just the healthcare in America is as large as the federal government. Do you realize that? It's $4 trillion. The federal government tax revenues are $3.5 trillion. Of course, they spend more, so they're probably bigger. But they're so big, the healthcare system is so big that the medical industrial complex dominates the Congress. They're the largest lobby in Congress by far, and they just essentially tell them what to do. And, you know, everybody runs down Obamacare. Well, Obamacare started out with some idealistic ideas about improving the whole thing and making it cheaper. But of course, they couldn't do anything because there was too much opposing them. The only thing that the healthcare people would agree to was making the whole thing bigger. So that's what Obamacare did. So, I mean, I'm sorry, I don't have a freaking magic wand. I would change everything.
Yeah, I think the big problem with Obamacare was really giving it the label Obamacare, because the moment you kind of politicize anything, you automatically have division, even when you don't have any facts. Chris Rock actually said that, you know, politics has become more like gangs now, that, you know, we agree with something regardless of whether it's true or not, depending on who said it. And I think, you know, certainly in regard to COVID, a lot of people formulate their opinions not based upon research, but based upon who said it, who made a statement. Yesterday, Greg Abbott came out and banned vaccine mandates in the state of Texas by employers, obviously other than federal government employers. And there's been a lot of kickback in the press about, you know, oh my goodness, you know, Texas is going to see, you know, an escalation of COVID deaths. But, you know, we've been very lax here for pretty close to a year. And, you know, it's just been normal life. I mean, I know people have had COVID. I had COVID, didn't know it. Shepherd had COVID, didn't know it. My son had COVID, didn't know it. My son's mom had COVID, didn't know it. My girlfriend had COVID, didn't know it. But, you know, I know some people have been sick in bed with it. You know, some of them were older. Some of them had comorbidities. But I'm told frequently by people online, if I ever dare to interject into a comment about anything, that, look, you know, if you don't wear a mask, if you don't get this vaccine, you're just a ticking time bomb. You're walking through a field of snakes, and one day one of these snakes is going to bite you. But, you know, we feel like we've got no voice at the table anymore, because Texas is now, you know, especially after the abortion ban thing, that conveniently gave politicians a label to throw at Texas, like, oh, Texas has completely gone off the rails. Texas is completely crazy. If you're from Texas, you know, those backwards people, you know, they don't believe in science, they don't believe in this, you know, they're misogynistic, they don't believe in a woman's right to choose. And they've effectively cut off any type of representation, you know, voice wise from Texas. And I see them doing it, you know, they've done it to Florida, obviously, with DeSantis and some of the decisions he's made about lockdowns. But they're slowly trying to put these people in these little boxes where if these people say anything, those dissenting voices need to be shut down. And it's coming towards this kind of 1984 Ministry of Information thing whereby, you know, you cannot question the official narrative. And I thought this whole transparency thing was supposed to be about us getting all the full information so we can make our own decisions and we can get different opinions from different people and not have to follow what somebody is almost like dictating you to do. Because I don't feel that healthcare is a benefit if I'm forced to participate in something which, you know, I'm kind of against.
Wolf, that's eloquent. And if your listeners haven't read 1984, they should have a look at it, and they'll be surprised at how the guy predicted the future. And a lot of the elements in 1984 are being enacted right now. And my editorial comment about what you say is you've got perhaps the only state which may have the will to try to secede from the union. And if you do, I'm going to try to get over there before the whole thing.
We'll let you in, Robert.
I hope so. But before we jump into COVID and what's going on with that, let's chat just a little bit more about how the parts of healthcare interact. And I just want to talk about the FDA, because the FDA has become a creature of pharma. Now, that has a legal term. That means that it's entirely controlled by big pharma. And the reason why has to do with influence theory. They are paid directly from the pharmaceutical companies through this system called user fees since around 2003. And when this went in, there were a lot of critics that said it would be a disaster. And of course, it has been a disaster. So the FDA now regards these companies as clientele rather than entities to be regulated. And if they don't approve a drug, arguably they might not be able to make a payroll. So they basically, the FDA is entirely irresponsible as far as their original mission to protect the public. They have arguably caused the obesity epidemic, which we can get into through advocation of carbohydrates and vegetable starches instead of animal starches. And the science is going that way now. The meat animal fats and so on, they're the most healthy thing you can eat. And you should get away from, okay. So the FDA was involved with that and promoting all the industry narratives on the food side. But the FDA has truly been working against this for at least two decades. The journals in medicine are 95% ghostwritten now. That means the industry writes their papers that get in the journals. Obviously, bias is introduced, and the editors are directly paid by the industry hundreds to millions of dollars a year each. I mean, it's an freaking believable thing. And the biggest journals, the big five, with the exception of BMJ, the British Medical Journal, are really have become forces of industry marketing and should be regarded as marketing arms of the pharmaceutical industry. So
Can you back up just a little bit and explain what the user fees are?
User fees are fees that are incurred during the patent process, right? And so, in other words, they pay a certain amount to, you know, turn in a certain form, and these fees are in the millions and millions and millions of dollars. So it's well over half of the FDA's total $5 billion. Expenditure a year are paid directly by the pharmaceutical companies. So, yeah, I mean, this is a terrible, terrible conflict of interest. And a conflict of interest is the way we describe bribery now. I don't think it's a good, it's a politically correct way to say that. And disclaimer of conflict of interest is now accepted as a way to get around bribery, right? So at the end of the paper you publish, you publish where the financial sources of the paper were, and that in theory sanitizes the source of information. Well, it doesn't get any of the filth off of a paper that is paid for by a corporation. You know, it just doesn't help at all. In other industries like law and government, these things could lead to criminal prosecution, but in medicine, they're ignored. I mean, it's a very wild scene. Let me read a story about the pharmaceutical companies. Peter Rost, who was a Pfizer marketing vice president, he said, "It's scary how many similarities there are between this industry and the mob. Obscene amounts of money, killings and deaths, bribing politicians and others. The difference is all these people in the drug industry look upon themselves as law-abiding citizens. However, when they get together as a group, it's almost like you have war atrocities. People do things they don't think they're capable of because the group can validate what you're doing is okay." So, anyway, that's a bit of a rant.
I think one of the best illustrations I've heard about the FDA to kind of put it into context for most people is when the FDA approved the vaccines. Now, can you actually clear this up? Did they actually approve the vaccines or just a specific content of the vaccine? Recently, when the FDA approved it, did they approve the vaccine as such or just various components within the vaccine?
Wolf, yeah. I can't stand to keep up with that stuff after I understood what was going on, because I have friends that have read the original studies, and one of my friends, who's like the brightest guy in the room, he says, I think the vaccine helps and it works, but I couldn't tell because they didn't include all the data.
Right.
And so who said that I'm not disappointed that you lied to me? I'm disappointed that I can never trust you again. So these entities, these pharma companies, have lied to us over and over and over, as documented by their criminal settlements. Now, they never admitted to lying, but when you pay somebody $3 billion, you pay a regulator $3 billion to get them to leave you alone, you have to assume there's some a fire where the smoke is, right? So they've lied to us over and over, over again. They've promised not to do it again. And then they stuff a study like these up our backsides that claim these quote vaccines, which aren't really vaccines because they don't, confer any immunity. They claim these things are 95% efficacious. Well, when that happened, when I first heard that, I had to laugh because I knew that the vaccines they'd come up with in the last 20 years were nearly worthless. I mean, the flu vaccine, all you have to do is go to Cochrane reviews and search for influenza vaccine, you can read exactly how they work or they don't work. So don't take my word for it. Go to Coccraine Reviews, which is the most respected source in medicine. And I already sort of went over the HPV vaccine. That is likely fraudulent. And we are spending billions and billions of dollars on these things. And so when they said that this thing was 95% efficacious, I just shook my head. I knew it was nonsense.
Yeah. Well, it's actually dropped, I think, with, I can't remember if it's Moderna or Pfizer, that after 6 months, some of it's dropped down to 20% efficacy.
Let me tell you what happens. What the aftermarket studies have shown is that it may decrease the disease process for 2 to 4 months, and then it is worthless. All these things, they're not vaccines. I mean, it's an obscenity. It's the most profitable medication likely in history, because in theory, everyone has got to be inoculated with this stuff. And the coercion to do this is just the most outrageous civil liberties violation in my lifetime.
Now, is it a conspiracy theory that Fauci actually has ownership of some of the patents in the delivery method of mRNA vaccines, or is that just an internet myth?
I can't address that definitively. Right. I mean, I wouldn't put anything past Fauci. Mm-hmm. Fauci is an incredibly corrupt character. He's definitely allied with these forces that are forcing this thing down our throat. And basically, I think he's... The crimes against humanity are twofold, right? First, the vaccine fatalities are phenomenal, and they are reported in a database called the VAERS, vaccine something or other, which is a remnant that still exists, that still is active, of the regulatory system that's still working. So the reported fatalities are now around 18,000, and any ordinary vaccine would be jerked from the market after 50 fatalities. So this thing has been allowed to go on for God knows what reason, despite the fact that the vaccine is causing fatalities. And the underreporting on the VAERS database is thought to be up to 100 to 1. Now, obviously 100 times that many people are not getting killed, but the underreporting for things like stroke and myocarditis for the young people, it's a very easy thing to underreport, especially when it takes 45 minutes to fill out the form and the doctors are not as sanguine about wasting 45 minutes of their time screwing around with something like that. So, I mean, it's an outrageous scene.
Well, it's kind of a contradiction with an mRNA vaccine, because the inventor of the kind of delivery process, who has now been scrubbed from YouTube for saying it was a bad idea to kind of use this method to combat COVID, said that unless you use this type of treatment or therapy on an individual basis, a one-size-fits-all just doesn't work. I mean, it's like if you buy a one-size-fits-all t-shirt from the store, you can guarantee it's not going to fit 90 people. There's going to be 10% of people who it fits, but it's called one size fits all. And it's the same thing with these mRNA vaccines, that they're not tailor-made to your individual RNA, and it's just a generic one size fits all. Might work better for some people, might have no effect on some people. And that's not what people traditionally understand a vaccine being. A vaccine is supposed to prevent you from getting the disease. Not some people it protect and other people it's as if they never had it. So how do they get away with continually using that label vaccine on something which would have never been given that label before?
Well, they changed the definition of vaccine. Have you heard that one? Look, Wolf, you're farther into the weeds than I am. I'm a rule of thumb guy, and I'm going to give you another quote by a CEO who was responsible for promoting chloramphenicol, which was an antibiotic that caused aplastic anemia and killed many children. He said, if we put horse manure in a capsule, we could sell it to 95% of these doctors. So he stopped promoting the drug only after it went off patent and became less profitable. That's their attitude towards doctors and their attitude towards us. They can promote anything. They can sell anything. It's all influence theory. Nothing is so strongly fortified that it cannot be taken with money. That's Cicero, right? The money involved here is phenomenal. Pharma is $1.3 trillion worldwide. 75% of the profits and 40% of the gross revenues are inside the U.S. So their interest in focusing on us is overwhelming. So we're really the primary victims. The rest of the world is secondary because they don't make as much money off them.
Right. So I guess the main question then is, what do we do? I mean, I'm going to go back to my initial comment about I got to go to the doctor when something's wrong and I got to trust what the doctor is going to say. So what is it that you can tell the non-medical person out there what they should be doing?
Okay, so as far as COVID and all that other stuff goes, I would read the show notes, listen to the videos in the show notes, and I'll send this over to the Wolf, and hopefully the Shepherd will post them. As far as the COVID situation, I think you're going to have to take matters into your own hands because it's so bad that you can't trust your doctors. Your doctors are under tremendous pressure to go with the party line, and you're going to have to make some judgments on your own, which I know is not easy. But let me just address the treatment and the treatment denial going on. There are simple medications that are some of the most safe and effective medications we've ever produced in medicine that are effective against COVID if given early. And the information is all outlined beautifully on a American Academy of Physician Specialists brochure that you can download from the internet and have a look at the other links. But that these things aren't being used is genocidal. They likely could have prevented 85% of the fatalities of the 600,000 fatalities that we've had in America from COVID, or in theory, the fatalities. I mean, who knows whether the statistics are accurate, but this is the biggest part of the story. It's not that the vaccine doesn't work or kills your neighbor or occasionally gives him a stroke. The biggest part of the story is the therapy denial. And how the reason for this, I just got to work this in. The reason for these companies denying the therapy is it's illegal to market a vaccine on several levels. It's illegal to market an experimental treatment or vaccine if there are already adequate therapies. And we have therapies that are quite adequate. The last thing I just want to bring out here is that the average age of death from COVID is 83, and that the average age of death of all the rest of us is 79. So this thing is picking off people who have one foot in the grave, and the kids that have been killed, there are autopsy studies on these kids, and they're universally kids who have some sort of horrible pre-existing medical problem. So this thing just isn't the serious problem that it's been made out to be. And our treatments are almost completely just designed to make money and scare the hell out of us. And this is the modus operandi of pharma over the last 20 years. It's what I wrote my book about largely. And you can read about it here in Butchered by Healthcare. And I'm a historian rather than a detail guy. I mean, I can't stand to read about the details of COVID and all the ins and outs of the spike protein and all the rest of that, because I know the story from my rules of thumb. Don't lie to me again.
Yeah. Now, I think other than giving vaccines a completely different definition, another trick they pulled was confusing the words of and with. You know, the number of people dying with COVID and of COVID is very different. And even on the CDC's own website, where it breaks down the statistics, people who were officially dying of COVID as opposed to with COVID is very, very differently. Because, I mean, again, you might die in a motorcycle accident with the strep virus. Did you die of the strep virus? No, you died because you were decapitated when you hit that lamppost. But I think they've managed to pull the wool over people's eyes in terms of, I guess, overstating, you know, the dangers of COVID. Because unless you create some type of hysteria, it's very difficult to try and get people on board with taking something which, you know, a simple, I guess, investigative project would tell you, well, look, there's been no vaccine in history which has gone through this short period of, you know, trial and approval that has been, you know, given to the masses on this type of level. But again, outside of that education being suppressed, they're mixing up the words deliberately of and with, I think has been pretty paramount in, you know, getting people into this panic mode of having to take this vaccine if they feel they're in a high risk group. But I think people need to be reminded that the FDA also approved cigarettes and alcohol. So if people think that the vaccine's safe because it's been approved by the FDA, then you need to question why they're not downing four bottles of vodka and smoking a carton of cigarettes every night if everything the FDA approves is safe for you.
Wolf, just to repeat, this has been pharma's modus operandi for the last 20 years and a bit before that. But for the last 20 years, they've been inventing diseases and then inventing the drugs to treat them. Oftentimes they're toxic. I mean, the cholesterol story is very similar. The osteoporosis story is very similar. And you can read about it in my book. The thing that has bothered me the most about this whole thing has been the censorship. And my favorite tech company, right? Google, with its beloved YouTube, right? With their do no evil original motto, right? Which has been changed instantly, at least they're honest, has been the center of the censoring apostasy. I mean, it just makes me sick beyond belief. I can't stand any of them. And I, you know, you guys have a Google center in Austin. So I maybe ought to throw them out of the state. Mm.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, we got to make room for Elon because he's coming with Tesla.
Yeah, he's coming soon. We're hoping to get on one of those one-way tickets to Mars type things at some point. Yeah. So yeah, we're gonna sign up for the first people willing to die on Mars.
Yeah, I mean, might as well.
We got nothing else going on. So, yeah.
You know, good places. Yeah. Well, Doc, thanks for joining us today. Before we close, can you let everybody know how to get in touch with you, social media, your website, mention your books again? I'm guessing they're available at several spots, you know, Amazon, things like that. So if you can go over all that for everybody. And of course, yes, we will have it all in the show notes and things like that as well.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. And yes, they're available on Amazon, but I didn't go strictly to Amazon. They're available anywhere. You can just Google my name or the names of the books, which are butchered by healthcare. Healthcare is in apostrophes. And I'm just going to spend 30 seconds on the hormone book. And just to help you hopefully improve the credibility of the hormone story. So if you guys may or may not know that the most expensive disease we have is Alzheimer's, right? It's if you count the long-term care costs, and it's a terrible problem. It's like having a stroke. The people are not hardly people anymore. They're just wandering around and not mentally alert. And a hormone, if given at menopause, right, at 50 and older, would prevent 80% of Alzheimer's in some studies. Now, this is such a inflammatory and strong statement because there are 10 pharmaceutical drugs that are patented that cost $1,000 to $2,000 a month that are being used for Alzheimer's. So this is not something that's widely known. And the whole thing made me so angry when I read about it finally that I put those 75 references in an appendix. So if you get this thing and it's like $4 on Amazon, I'm not a profit making operation, right? It's very hard to get exposure as an indie author. But if you get this thing, turn to appendix C and you'll see the references for Alzheimer's being almost completely prevented by estrogen given from the time of menopause. So, I mean, that one fact is just stunning. And the rest of it, in my opinion, is stunning as well. But I always bring that up if I don't have a chance. And my website is robertyohoauthor.com, robertyohoauthor.com. And there you can pick up 50% of the audio books and 50% of each book for free.
Oh, very cool. Well, thanks once again for joining us, and that will do it for this episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd. Lots of stuff that you shared with us. We really appreciate it. It was a great learning experience, and we will catch you on the next one.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd podcast.
If you like what you just heard, we hope you'll pass along our web address, thewolfandtheshepherd.com, to your friends and colleagues. And please leave us a positive review on iTunes when you get a chance. Check us out on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for additional content. Join us next time for another episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd.